Jackson, and I believe with all of my heart that it is a contributing factor to our juvenile delinquency of today. I 100% believe it. Why I believe that is because I know how it feels when you sing it. I know what it does to you. And I know the evil feeling that you feel when you sing it. I know the lost position that you get into in the beat. Well, if you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, they'll, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Rock music. Ingredients include guitar, usually electric, drums, bass, and of course lead vocals to create an historic genre. But there's usually one element that just never seems to fit, especially growing up listening to music, and that's black people. Is it true that black people and rock music don't mix? Or is this just a myth? And where does that idea even come from? On this episode of The Smart Stories, we'll take a quick journey through rock history, back to where it all started, and find the answer. Okay, so let's be very clear here, and it's very clearly apparent if you listen to any episodes of this show, but I love rock music. It's absolutely one of my favorite genres. We're talking David Bowie.
I'm an alligator. I'm a mama, papa coming for you. I'm the space invader.
The Clash. Pink Floyd. Just name a few. And of course, The Who, The Strokes, Ramones, The Stooges, Black Flag, Fugazi, and you have to mention The Beatles. And how could I almost forget Talking Heads, who have to be one of my favorite bands ever? I think you get the point. I'm mostly plugged into the legends, the greats of the genre. And truth be told, this long list is pretty white. When I really got into rock music in college, that was always apparent to me, but I didn't think much of it. I simply accepted the fact that rock history didn't look like me, and thus, I felt like I myself were out of the ordinary in diving so deep into the genre. I was the odd one out in a culture of black folk that mostly listened to hip-hop and R&B. I was called an Oreo in high school and was told that I acted white. So getting into rock music just continued the trend. No big deal. I felt special, but also isolated because I was a fan of a genre that most black people and society thought was for white people. But it turns out, I wasn't the only one that felt this way. Lenny Kravitz is a black and rock and roll icon who is gearing up for a European tour and brand new album. But he recently made headlines for saying that black media elites haven't celebrated his accomplishments enough, especially at black award shows like the BET Awards. As a matter of fact, the BET Awards don't even have a category for the kind of music Lenny Kravitz makes. But that wasn't even the most interesting thing he said in that interview. Kravitz revealed that there was an article written about him in the 90s that said, and I quote, "If Lenny Kravitz were white, he would be the next savior of rock and roll." Honestly, that's pretty messed up. Kravitz went on to say that he got a lot of negativity thrown at him by all these older white guys in the music industry as he rose up to fame. Men who weren't going to let him have that position. And on the other hand, black music elites, according to Kravitz, and personally I have to agree, failed to highlight and prop up black artists that make music out of the so-called black music categories, like hip-hop and R&B. But what's really the most confusing part of this question is that I know black people love rock music because I love rock music, and I know for a fact there are other fans out there just like me. And there are a lot of fans of Lenny Kravitz too, obviously. That's why he's an icon. But where does this idea come from that we associate an entire genre to one race, that we associate this genre to white people? Because that just doesn't make any sense. And on top of that, I know it's a bit of a plot twist, white people didn't even invent rock music. So how did we get here? How did this idea, how did this myth come about? So to really start to understand how this all happened, we got to go back to January of 1973. Pulitzer Prize winner Margot Jefferson wrote a piece titled Ripping Off Black Music. The piece was partially an exploration of white appropriations of black music. I'll read it. "The night Jimmy died, I dreamed this was the latest step in a plot being designed to eliminate blacks from rock music so that it may be recorded in history as a creation of whites. Future generations will be taught that while rock may have had its beginnings among blacks, it had its true flowering among whites. The best black artists will thus be studied as remarkable primitives who unconsciously foreshadowed future developments," end quote. And Margot Jefferson's dream manifested in the worst possible way. It came true. According to anthropologist Maureen Mann, by the mid-1970s, young black musicians who really wanted to play songs by Led Zeppelin and Grand Funk Railroad recalled being ridiculed by white and black peers. So we could already see that the narrative slowly started to shift, but that's just one of three examples I want to tell you about.
WBBM News Time, 9:18. Time for Brad Palmer, Sport.
Many of the fans are scattering off the field now when they fight the police. And many Sox security members are joining the police, which are now about 40 or 50, and they're slowly, now rapidly, walking out the center field where the fire is burning. The fans are now streaming off the field in great numbers, and I doubt if very few will be left to confront the police as they come in helmets and nightstick gear.
That was the scene between games of a doubleheader at Comiskey Park last night as White Sox owner Bill Veeck went a promotion too far. It was billed as Disco Demolition Night. A rock disc jockey came up with the idea of blowing up disco records as part of his self-serving campaign against disco. And the White Sox went along by admitting anybody bringing a disco record for 98 cents.
Okay, in my research, I found out that in July of 1979, thousands of white rock fans rioted at Chicago's Comiskey Park at Disco Demolition Night. They burned disco records in what was seen as an anti-black, anti-gay, and anti-woman reactionary uprising.
The fans who rioted didn't come to see the White Sox or Detroit. They came to do their thing. And they did, at the expense of the White Sox, the Detroit Tigers, and the city of Chicago. Tiger manager Sparky Anderson summed it all up when he said,
"I've never seen anything like it. It's sad. I would say it's a black mark on baseball."
Disco is a genre that has historically had its home in queer and black communities. A lot of disco songs like ones done by Donna Summer, for example, made their rounds in gay clubs. So having white rockers violently destroy disco records at an event specifically for that is a little telling and a bit ironic, again, because rock was made by black people. But the last example might be the most insidious.
All right, this is an oldie, but, it's an oldie where I come from. All right, guys, listen, this is a blues riff from B. Watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay?
In 1985, an 80s classic, Back to the Future, released. It featured a sequence in which history is altered so that Chuck Berry's sound is retroactively invented by Marty McFly, a white teenager. In the movie, while Marty McFly is playing Chuck Berry's classic song, Johnny B. Goode, there's a scene where Chuck Berry's quote-unquote cousin calls Chuck Berry up and puts him onto the new sound.
Chuck, it's Marvin, your cousin, Marvin Berry. You know that new sound you're looking for? Well, listen to this.
These three examples are just a small glimpse into how who significantly contributed to rock music has changed over time, and in turn created the idea that the genre did not belong to or have a place with black people, that rock is white. Unfortunately, we've seen this before. Black people's contributions slowly being wiped from history and replaced by this strange idea that it was a white person all along. It's not enough to make us feel like we don't have a place. We are told that we didn't even play a part, that we were not the first to ever do it. The story gets rewritten. But here's the thing. The reality of it is that black folk have made major contributions to rock music, and one black woman in particular was a grandmother of the entire genre.
Then why should I feel so discouraged? No. Then why should my heart feel sad?
Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
For as I is on the little sparrows, oh yes, and I know that he watches over me. And I say,
you're listening to The Smart Stories, New and Adapted.
Because I am so happy. And I say, because I am so free. Yeah, I know his eyes. His eye is on the little sparrow. Oh, yes, indeed.
Rock and roll's most direct influence is the blues. It's a style of music that originated on the plantations in the Deep South in the early 19th century. Many of us know that enslaved people fused the sounds and rhythms of their homelands and created songs of resistance, which in turn created genres like gospel, blues, and R&B. You know, genres that are very associated and closely tied to the black community. In 1983, Rosetta Tharpe came onto the scene and took this tradition in a whole new direction with her breakout song, Rock Me.
Now, won't you hear me swinging? Hear the words that I'm singing. Munch my soul with water from on high.
This song showed how Tharpe could mix her distinctive guitar sound and melodic blues with traditional gospel music, making her a trailblazer.
If you leave me, I will die. just hide me in thy bosom. Palestine.
This may not sound like much now, but you got to remember, back then, this was revolutionary. And keep in mind, this happened before Elvis, Chuck Berry, and Johnny Cash. She turned this new musical style into an international sensation. She made history. But Tharp's career took a turn in the U.S. for exactly the reason Jefferson described in her dream, or should I say nightmare. Young white men started taking over the rock and roll scene and copying the sounds that Tharp created. And because she was black, specifically a black woman, much of the credit she was due was never given to her in her lifetime. She experienced a brief resurgence in her career in 1964, just a few years before her death, when she toured Europe and played a legendary show in Manchester. And in my mind, this further cemented her status as a rock icon. So let's break it down. Close your eyes and imagine you're in the audience watching a rock and roll legend perform one of her final performances.
Oh, the sweet horsey. Oh, this is the wonderfulest time of my life.
You see her step down a horse-drawn carriage with gospel and blues rhythms playing in the background. She's dressed to the nines and bobs to the music with a young gentleman on her arm. She begins the concert with a gospel tune, Didn't It Rain, poetically under light showers.
Didn't it rain, children? Rain, oh yes. Didn't it, yes, didn't it? You know it did, didn't it? Oh, oh yes, how it rained.
She rocks and sways to the rhythm and performs with a level of showmanship that can only be done by a rock star. In this case, the very first. And that's the essence of blues. That's the essence of rock and roll. There's so much more to her story. But the point is, Tharp should get all the flowers. And the fact is, she hasn't. We gotta ask the question, why? Who or what decides who is seen as a major contributor or creator to the genre of rock and roll? Okay, so I did some digging and I was able to find a few reasons as to why. First, there was the segregated charting system. Starting in 1939, Billboard essentially created a white chart and a black chart when tracking hits. A chart called Hillbilly Hits, for example, was designed to focus on music sales to white people in rural areas. Then, in 1940, just a year later, Billboard began to create other charts, like Harlem Hit Parade, that listed the most popular songs in Harlem. And the reason why this is important to note is because black artists couldn't cross over to hillbilly hits with songs that fit the genre simply because of their skin color. While charts aren't segregated today, the influence does still remain. Black artists are seen as a natural fit for genres like R&B, hip-hop, and soul, but aren't seen as a natural fit for genres of music they created, like rock, like country. Remember, Lenny Kravitz was never given his props as a rock icon, and in some ways wasn't considered a rock artist either because of his skin color. He wasn't seen as a natural fit, and thus, he was kept out of the conversation. There are two points I want to land on that can chart how we can take the next step into improving our relationship, by our, I mean black people's relationship, with rock music. First, we gotta recognize the gatekeeping that's been happening for years and is still going on today.
Jan Wenner's new book, The Masters, features interviews with a cast of all-white male rock legends, including Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger, and Bruce Springsteen. In a wide-ranging New York Times interview published Friday, Wenner was asked why no women were included in his list.
It's not that they're inarticulate, although go have a deep conversation with Grace Slick or Janis. Please be my guest. You know, Joni was not a philosopher of rock and roll. She didn't, in my mind, meet that test.
He He spoke similarly about black artists.
Black artists, I mean, Stevie Wonder, Crowley, they're genius, right? These are genius artists. I mean, I suppose when you use a word as broad as the Masters, fault is using that word, but maybe Marvin Gaye. I could cut Curtis Mayfield they just didn't articulate at that level.
During the 30-minute interview, Wenner did acknowledge he would face criticism, but didn't backtrack.
Just for public relations sake, maybe I should have gone and found one black and one woman artist to include here that didn't measure up to that same historical standards, just to avert this kind of criticism.
On Saturday, Wenner apologized, writing, "I made comments that diminished the contributions, genius, and impact of black and women artists. I totally understand the inflammatory nature and badly chosen words and deeply apologize and accept the consequences." Wenner and Rolling Stone magazine, which he left in 2019, have always welcomed controversy.
Music figures like Jan Wenner play an oversized role in deciding what music and artists are highlighted. Like we've talked about earlier, music journalists in the 90s, who we can assume were white men, said that if Kravitz was white, he'd be the savior of rock and roll. And this incident with Wenner happened just last year. This is the kind of thinking gatekeepers perpetuate. It perpetuates this idea that Kravitz and any other black artist cannot enter the figurative gates of rock stardom. They can't be part of the conversation, the interviews, the books that feature rock legends, and the Grammy nominations. The best they can do is exist on the margins. And that leads me to my second point. We see this happening and we internalize it. We are told that we didn't belong for so long. And now, the natural disposition of defiance and dignity is to say, fine, I won't belong, I'll do my own thing. So this statistic does a great job of showing where the black community stands in terms of rock music. In 2022, CBS released a poll that said only 6% of black people said that rock music was their favorite genre, while 40% of whites said that they loved it. So we go to other genres that seem more welcoming and in line with black culture. But by reclaiming rock history, we are able to break those narratives and paradigms and find beauty in something that we were central in creating. Okay, so before we go, I want to have a little fun real quick. At the beginning of this episode, I listed some of my favorite rock and roll artists, and to be honest, all of them were white. So now, I'll recommend some of my favorite black rock and roll artists. Okay, first up is Michael Kiwanuka and his seminal album, I love this one, Kiwanuka, self-titled. What makes you blind? I hope to find who I believe in. Get back in line, I can't deny myself. Show me the feeling. It explores black identity and belonging, and I highly recommend it. You should check out the songs You Ain't the Problem and Living in Denial. Danger Mouse is also a producer, so he's helping lead the way on this album, which is very experimental, very bold, and very black, which I love. You got to put me on. I know we can come along. Don't hesitate. Next up is Azia, who started out when she was only 21. And according to her, she makes rock music that she would want Debbie Harry to sing, Prince to co-produce, and John Bonham to drum on. Her words. If you want music that has punk and an angsty edge, I think she's a great choice. Check out her song Atomic. It's a beautiful one. Thin Lizzy was a very influential band from the 70s, and they released one of their best albums, jailbreak in 1976. Their lead singer, Phil Lynott, who was black, was known for weaving in working-class tales and Celtic culture in his lyrics.
Guess who just got back today? Them wild-eyed boys that had been away. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy.
I recommend The Boys Are Back in Town and Jailbreak. They're top tier. Check them out.
Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men.
The last pick I'll recommend is a band called Algiers from Atlanta, Georgia. They're the more experimental pick from the artists I've listed already. And the new album, Shook, is pretty emblematic of that.
Eyes in this town follow me around like I'm the one that stole their name.
Their lead singer, James Franklin Fisher, who is black, brings post-punk and southern gothic literature to the band's music. Pretty interesting. Try their song 73%. So I hope you'll check out these songs. And I gotta admit, this list is pretty men-heavy, so I myself have a lot more work to do in expanding who fills my own playlist. You know, we all have to start somewhere. This episode of The Smart Stories was adapted from an original script by me and Garrison Hayes. Hey, thanks for listening, and I'll be back soon. And of course, happy Black History Month. Here's Bullet Men by Paris, Texas. She's